gentlemen, honorable members, and everybody in. I also welcome new faces. Okay, I withdraw the latter part of it. I withdraw the latter part. No one wants to be regarded as a stranger. All of you, honorable members, you are members of this ad hoc committee. Let me just briefly apologize for the changes that came about today. Anyone who has been inconvenienced by these changes, we really extend our apologies. I think my co-chairperson will share the same sentiment with me. The ad hoc committee, by its nature, you will find that honorable members are committed in other committees and or other parliamentary activities and functions. Therefore, there was a necessity that you had to reschedule this meeting until this time, which was found to be sort of, to an extent, suitable to a number of people than it would have been if we had continued this morning. And then, what is going to happen today? You will recall that we had the briefing initially on the 18th from the Justice Department. We had the submissions in the public hearings on the 19th. That was last week on Wednesday. Now today, the Department of Justice is going to give its response to the submissions of the 19th of January. You recall that the way ad hoc committees and committees operate, the doors are never closed for any person who would like to make a submission. I'm told by the Justice Department that as a matter of fact, there has been some additional submissions that were made. He will refer to them during his responses. We have briefly discussed with my co-chairperson as to how we'll handle those submissions that arrived late, and then we'll take the process forward. But I will give my co-chairperson briefly, if any. No points to make. Okay, without any waste of time, Justice Department, J.P. Skosana, the floor is yours if we can get the responses from the Department of Justice.
Thank you, Co-Chair, and we welcome the opportunity to come and give the committee our views on the submission received. And also be further guided by the honourable members of this joint committee. I'm today accompanied by Mr. Juan Dilange, who's known to the members of the committee, I suppose. From our discussions with the co-chairs,
sorry for interruption. And he is not a new face; he's a familiar person here. And then, honorable members, both of them were once my magistrate. I did appear before them in many cases.
And the only difference is that at that time there was no code of conduct, so we could say anything from the bench.
They were able to switch off the tape.
Sibanyoni Mukom is the last, and then if I say I had a puncture, and then not the very ones, some of them will say, "Oh, that's an old story."
Thank you, Chair. Just to briefly outline the processes that we have undertaken as a department and on which we'll be reporting back. We have immediately after the briefings looked at the technical aspect of the code, just from its own typographical and language usage and style, etc., and bring it consistent with the act. That we have done, and the version we've circulated today is basically reflective of an improved version of the code as was tabled. So we've dealt with the style of the drafting part of it, etc. We have not tampered with the policy issues. We have not put in what has not been excluded. We have not excluded what has been put in. We have put it in a way that it makes a proper reading and is in line with the drafting principles that this government adhere and subscribe to. So I will basically indicate those changes as I go through the document as submitted. From the most substantive input, the first three submissions which were made in the public hearing here, one of them suggests a major shift from the code itself. They still amplify and support the code as is, and I think we have to that extent acknowledge that fact, and we'll reflect it so in our report. Since the public hearings, there were also two additional submissions which were received. To remind the members, we had during the public hearings submission from the director from the Institute for Accountability in Southern Africa by Mr. Paul Hoffman. We have the Center for input from the Center for Constitutional Rights, the former Anthony Clair Foundation, by Ms. Nikiti Haviland. And there was also a received submission which was not referred to, but it was from, which was not discussed in detail, by David Robert Lewis. And then after that public hearing, we got two submissions. And they were received late yesterday, one from the South African Law Society of South Africa, as well as IDASA. So the input that we have circulated only take into account the first three, which were made during the public hearings, both in terms of content and technical aspects of the code. We have not have had the opportunity to reflect on the inputs received late last night, but what we thought we were going to do and what we've promised the co-chairs is that we will then develop a comprehensive report that covers all the submissions received to date, so that we can basically document our views and inputs in on paper in terms of how of trying to assist Parliament to deal with the instrument. Now, without further ado, let me just go through the code as amended and just indicate what we have done from a technical perspective. You would have noticed that the initial code was not consistent in terms of language use. Elsewhere it says a judge shall, elsewhere a judge must. Somewhere else does not say must or shall, it just say the judge should. Somewhere it says the judge resist to do 1, 2, 3. So we've tried to bring some form of harmony in terms of streamlining the language per se. And the version that you have was basically clean in terms of that. And we have not tried the preamble. What we did basically, we just brought the approval process by the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa to read consistent with the legislation, but also with the style and practice of Parliament. So we've cleaned only the language part of the preamble. We have included something which was never there on page 3. We have included definitions, as it is the normal drafting style that when you use words in the content of the bill, we should use them in a particular understanding and context, and therefore important that you put them in the definitions. For example, throughout the instrument, they no longer refer to a code of judicial conduct. They just say code. So it's important just to give that explanation that code means code of sure conduct. So that's the only definition for now we have put in the document. Obviously, some of them may still come in terms of substantive when we go further through the process. But we thought that definition clause was very important and also critical to legal drafting. The second part, it's the second clause that we have dealt with technically is the clause two, application. Honourable members will remember that the initial code as tabled did not deal with application per se under that provision. In fact, what the court have done, they've taken application under interpretation. So under interpretation, they've said this code shall apply to judges whatever, but that's application. So we've simply removed that clause from interpretation because you are right space, application. But we've also made it a more kind of we've refined in terms of drafting. So when you look at under application, those number one, only number one is a new edition, and we have taken from the interpretation cleaned up. The code applies to every judge referred to in section 71G of the Act who's performing active service, and unless the contents indicates otherwise, also to a judge discharged from active service, an acting judge, a judicial officer, a judge not in active service is bound by this code insofar as it is applicable. They had these provisions as well. So that's why I said we have not added anything of substance. We have taken where it is and brought it where it should belong in terms of a drafting perspective, etc. And also cleaned up in terms of language use. And the style of drafting, you'll notice that in the initial code, they'll have about 8 or 10 sentences, all starting with a judge shall not, a judge shall not, a judge shall not. So what we have done that we only put that once in the heading a judge shall not, and then you go down and list those 10 without repeating the word 20 times, etc. As I've said, that's technical aspects and the style of drafting for the instrument to read intelligibly. Under three, the heading in the initial draft was interpretation, but in the body they also deal with objects of the code. They don't only deal with interpretation, they also deal with the issue that this code is intended to provide prevailing standards for conduct of judges. That's an object. So we've put another heading, objects and interpretation, so that it gives effect to what is contained in the body in terms of the reading, whatever. So we have not added anything new. We have just basically amplified and give a sense to what is intended in terms of the initial bill, etc. And we have cleaned the language. We have done it in a way of track changes where we have done so that it should be able to follow out what changes we have made. In some other instances, we have also changed the word. For example, somewhere the code would say a judge who has left service instead of a judge discharged from active service. So we have stayed with the language of the Act because it's already defined and also got a context within which you understand it. Because if you use a new terminology, it's not then the Act, it will bring challenges in terms of interpretation because you don't have a concept of leaving the judiciary. You are either in active service or discharged from active service, but you are always a judge for life, etc. So that's why we've cleaned up that process in terms of that. I've already said that we've harmonized the must and the shall. We've only used one consistent throughout, that a judge must uphold, a judge must maintain whatever, and that must, we understand that is in line with the principles of simple language. We have not added or substituted anything that was not said in the code. We've cleaned up. When you look at clause 4, we've said a judge, then we said must uphold, must obtain, must take all the steps to ensure, must not ask for acceptance special favor, instead of the initial tautology where the code will say a judge must not, a judge must not, a judge must not, in all the sentences, etc. And we have the view that will make is a reading of the of the of the of the of the code as we move forward, etc. There are no other changes in terms of the style, in terms of what we have drafted. I just want to go just through the technical changes we have effected, etc. And the new aspects that goes throughout to the end. And obviously, because we have made those changes in terms of including the definitions, whatever, that will basically have consequential changes in terms of the numbering of the instrument. So those are technical amendments were effected on the instrument, guided by the language used in the act, language for plain language, but also making sure that the reading makes sense, whatever. Some of the commentators have indicated those grammatical aspects. We've all taken care of them. We've all cleaned them up. So in terms of the grammar, it's now clear. There's only one aspect, obviously, that we still have to deal with, but it's an ongoing process. That's the formatting of the entire document in terms of the double spacing, where the sentence starts, whatever, etc. So that is consistent with other legislative instruments, etc. You will notice that in the definition of the act itself, the code forms part of the Judicial Service Amendment Act. It's not a separate part. So the requirements in terms of legislation should also be adapted in terms of this process. Now, I've indicated that when we did the technical amendments, we were guided by the input from the commentators. We were guided by the legislation. We had also taken a liberty from ourselves to submit the code to the state law advisors, just for them to give their views and expression on the bill, etc. And we have circulated for cabinet to assist in the process, the copy of the state law advisors, to extend that it assists in terms of dealing with the body content and how things should be captured, couched in the nation, whatever. But we have not tampered with the policy content of the code itself. We have just dealt with the technical aspects, etc. So, Chair, that is the to the extent that we have dealt with the technical aspects. On the three submissions received, there was only two aspects that were raised by of two aspects of a policy nature which were raised by Paul Hoffman, for example, and related to the, if you still have the submission, under note 9, the page is not numbered, under note 9, the third page of the Institute for Country of South Africa input, that there was a suggestion that we should add a sentence, nor should any judge not cease of a case initiate discussion with or volunteer an unsolicited views or any issue in the case to the judge or judge to assist with it, which in his submissions was basically of the view that was an important addition that will make sure that judges who are not part of a case should not be found themselves discussing that particular case, because they have nothing to do with that particular case. And we have not added that part. As I've said, that's a policy aspect that the House will guide whether they will want it in or out, whatsoever. But for now, the code is just simply saying that a judge shall not basically initiate discussion with on matters over which they are not seized with, etc. So he just wanted a further elaboration of this aspect. The second point, obviously, which was not in a written submission, which he said verbally, was his view around the political affiliation, etc. From all the submissions, even the submissions received yesterday from IDASA, there appears to be a unanimous position that judges should not belong to political parties in terms of submissions. So we have not tampered with the provision, stay as it is, obviously, and will further be guided by the Honorable House on how we deal with those aspects, etc. We have not, as I've said, we have not yet unpacked the data submission fully, but there are views which were also expressed before, that the style of drafting have got a rule and have got a note. The note is intended to amplify the rule in terms of interpretation. But there are other instances where the information in the note is so fundamental and key that it should basically form a rule. It does not basically interpret or interpret, but it brings in a new dimension that need to be prohibited by the rule itself, etc. And in the data submission, I noticed that they have also made an observation of those rules, which in their views should be part of the substance, which we have indicated that we agree with that perspective, so that it avoids confusion in terms of interpretation and what is prescribed, etc. And as part of the cleaning process and as part of the report that we'll submit to cabinet, will indicate which of the note in our view are so fundamental and substantive that they must constitute independent rules, and which of those ones can basically remain tools for interpretation. I was able to track down a comprehensive report which I've shared with the chairperson and with the co-chairs, and which I think it could be made available to members of the committee, which is the source which the judges, which the research document by the task team of the judges, head of court, when they drafted their rules initially in 2000. So the code as drafted now, and those rules were published in the 2000 South African Law Journal. So it is public knowledge. They've enumerated all their rules as they are, as they were submitted today. The only changes is that there are some of the rules which the judges have excluded from the later versions, which remains and which were published remains part of the initial guidelines that they've suggested. And some of them, which are very critical, I've seen that there are issue that deals with the prohibition of receipt of gifts or favors. There are those which deal with how judges should be sensitive to issues of social context, racism, sexism, in dealing with cases before them, etc. There are issues that deals with how judges must make public statements in media, whatever, etc., which the parliament may found very important to include. Because I'm saying the fact that themselves judges at that time were amenable to them. In fact, they suggested those rules would not make it very difficult, in my view, that today they'll refuse them, because as I say, there are any published document which articulate all those rules. There are very some, I've only mentioned three. There's one, for example, which says it is the duty of the judges to explain the court process to litigants so that they understand, become part of the process, because law is a complicated arena. If you don't have a lawyer, you are dependent on no one to explain to you. So it is the duty of a judicial officer to make sure that people understand the judicial process, whatever, and then run the process such a simplified manner. It's part of the rules which were there. So what we could assist Parliament with from our side, we could look at those ones which at that time were suggested, which we may, in our view, Parliament may found them to be very essential and significant, and can leave them up and this Honourable House can guide how they deal with them, etc. But it's a very well-researched document. It has done an extensive benchmarking with the US, Canadian, Australian Code of Conduct, and most of those things which are raised are based on this research, which we thought that would basically help this house in finalizing this process, etc. So, Chair, this is basically the general overview of how we dealt with this with the code as before, but which is being tabled to this house. other aspects which I indicated that the department need to reflect on are in relation to how the code is going to be administered by the department in conjunction with the Office of the Chief Justice, because every law that Parliament passes, there must be confirmation or assurance that one does, there will be resources to implement the instrument, and two, that there will be enough people on the ground, soldiers, to make sure that the objectives of the code are being implemented. After we've been engaging with the Office of the Chief Justice, and a comprehensive plan and budget is being worked out on how the Chief Justice will take control of this code. Remember, it's not going to be administered directly by the department. It's going to be administered by the Office of the Chief Justice. There will be a register in the Office of the Chief Justice. The infrastructure will be there. The budget will be there. And the reports, whatever, will be coming from that office as part of ensuring and guaranteeing the independence of the judiciary. The role of the minister and ourselves have to make sure that there's sufficient legislative measures and other programs that are necessary to assist the Office of the Chief Justice to drive this process. The Office of the Chief Justice is currently under a very big process of capacitating itself to meet its constitutional mandate, and this is part of that office process, of part of that exercise, to make sure that the judiciary, the Office of the Chief Justice, is well mandated to administer the code in its entirety. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sposana. Honorable members, you have heard. To me today, you know, it sounded clearer than when we were beginning. I don't know whether I'm becoming familiar with the process. Are there any comments or questions, Honorable Dinsmore?
Sir, Mr. Sposana has indicated that this has gone to the State Law Advisor, and I think that he also said that it is going to the Cabinet. It is, at any rate, being seen by the executive branch. I would like to ask you, as the joint chairpersons, that this copy should be sent also to the judges. We know the background in terms of Section 12 of the Act is that, in this the case of the Code, the Chief Justice drafts, the Minister concurs. If there are any differences, both versions come to us, and we do what we will do. But now, in this case, you have cleaned up, not necessarily revised. Just on a personal note, I quite liked, stylistically, the approach followed in the first draft we received. A judge upholds the independence. It's a stylistic thing, which has now been turned into more nuts and bolts and workaday legal language. So one doesn't object in respect of content. Stylistically, I quite like the other. One welcomes the fact that the typos have been cleaned up, obviously. And Mr. Sposana says that you have not tampered at all with the policy content. Just confirm for me, you haven't anticipated any changes that may come to the Amendment Act in respect of the new differentiation to be struck between judges discharged from service and judges fully retired. You haven't anticipated any of that in any of this redraft. That's a question. But my request to you as chairs is whether it isn't courteous and appropriate to send to the Chief Justice a copy of this, of the work that has been done on this, for his comment. Because I think it certainly does no harm, and for me it feels appropriate that we should get an indication not just from the executive branch but also from the Chief Justice on his approval or otherwise of this draft. Certainly does no harm, and for me I think it's also a pleasing and appropriate thing to do.
Can I find out whether Mr. Kurenov?
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just ask, will this code come back finally to this committee for final approval? And then what I want to ask is, on the whole thing of arbitrators, you know, appoint judges as arbitrators, is it not wise now to ask the Chief Justice whether we should put in an extra condition I think it's 17B or 17A now in the new code, where we say they can act as arbitrators on condition that both parties accept that it will not go on review to any other court of justice.
Any further question or comment, Honorable Sithole?
Thank you, Chair. I'm just pleased to know that it will be the responsibility of the judge to explain the litigation processes to the people, because you know, as we stand in South Africa, you know, going to court is the most frightful thing to an ordinary rural woman like myself, because in most cases you find that it's only the learned friends who understand what the process is. The ordinary people are just there. The ordinary people are just there as maybe spectators, or frightened spectators for that matter. I would like to be reassured that in explaining the other languages, like my language, are going to be taken into account, because if I go to court and you speak in English, I don't understand English. I understand Shangaan, and I want to be sure these processes are going to take make assurance double sure that a Shangaan rural woman from the rural of the rural is going to be made as comfortable as the judge himself in a court of law.
Okay, is that all? We will comment on the one that refers to the question person, but I would like to give to Honorable Skosana first.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and let me comment on the first question and around whether to anticipate as a department any rule in the code which basically may suggest a different view from our side. We did indicate the last time and said it is important that the code is not seen to be making law. The code need to regulate conduct. The act passed by this parliament already makes law. So in the act already makes a distinction between when and under what circumstances may retired judges perform any function, any service for which they may receive remuneration. The act does that. The act prevents any judge in active service from doing anything for which that judge receives a remuneration, except for royalties that comes from writing books. It's in the law, it's not in the code. I said when I indicated to Parliament that the fact that the judges have written it down there, to the extent that it amplifies or repeats what the law is harmless. But we should guard against judges legislating. It is the role of this parliament. Now, when, yes, now coming to your second point, if we go deeper into issues of what private concerns, when can fit into arbitration, the code then steps into a legislative arena of the minister, because the act says the minister is the one who gives consent to any judge to perform any functions which arbitration is part of, and maybe any other function, maybe teaching, whatever, etc. And the act says the minister must develop guidelines which will guide him or her in exercising the discretion of giving the process. Now, the issue of arbitration has been put in here because already it's a practice that troubles judges. And my view is that to be safe, it may be an aspect that can be left to be written by law, because they're already clear on that other aspect. But here, provide a neutral provision to say, in an event a judge has the necessary consent to perform their function by the minister, the judge must conduct in a particular way. So we're not even saying we're an arbitrator, because even when an arbitrator in a particular matter, that does not make you less of a judge. You are still bound by the rule, by the law. So it will be easier to say not even to refer to arbitration, but to give instances where judges have been allowed, have been found permissible for them to perform extrajudicial functions, and the following should apply. And you leave it to be regulated by other instruments in the law. Otherwise, we are going to find that the minister's guidelines provide differently, the code provides differently, and all of them are intended to amplify and guide the law. I understand the point raised by Mr. Kurunov in terms of reviews, conditions, whatever. But I'm of the view that it can be a matter that can be regulated as part of the law than as part of conduct on the part of the judge. That's why I said from our view, we would suggest that the code confine itself on issue of conduct and leave the legal aspects to be dealt with under the law. To respond to the last point by an honorable member, is that it's one of the points I've picked up in the earlier version of the judges, where they say judge should take some steps to enhance accessibility of the court and improve public understanding of the judicial proceedings. At that time, they had that from the judges, but now it's not in the new code. Hence, I would say these are some of the rules which are very fundamental to us, which Parliament may want to refer to. Hence, I said that it will help this committee if they can have a glance of what the omitted rules are and whether they would like to further explore on them, etc. And this is one of the fundamental aspects we are seeing in the Southern society will greatly enhance access to justice. Thank you. And the other one, of course, coaches, is the one where judges are expected to deal sensitively in terms of the sexism, racism, etc., because those are the challenges that still faces the court in certain parts of the world, etc. So if you put it in the code, you're basically strengthening the impartiality, the independence, and the sensitivity of the judicial moving forward. So, thanks, Chair.
Please, just a crisp answer. The presumed amendments to the Act are not in any way anticipated in this redraft. No.
The proposed amendment only deals with the regulations. There's no amendment suggested by the judiciary on issue of conduct, on the code at all. So they will not affect this aspect at all.
With respect, do you remember Advocate de Havilland's submission in which she argued that Section 16.4 does indeed deal with the matter of the distinction to be drawn between retired and judges discharged. So I think that it is at issue. And what I'm asking you is whether changes to the Act have in any sense been anticipated in your redraft. And I presume not. We have to change the Act first. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to hand to my co-chairperson. But before handing to my co-chairperson, let me just share with you what I heard from one advocate. I was impressed when Skosana was continuing when I was talking to my co-chairperson. One advocate was addressing three judges. Always, as soon as he starts speaking, he saw them speaking to one another, and he will stop waiting for them to continue. And then they'll say, just continue. And then as he starts again,
And then they started speaking like that. So Skosana realized that we can hear him, although we are talking to one of us. Yeah. My co-chairperson is going to respond to that issue of the reference of this code to the Chief Justice. Thank you very much.
No, thanks. Yeah, we will do that. As a committee, we'll send that for the comments of the Chief Justice. But firstly, we have to, because we haven't received the entire responses from the department. You know, they are still finalizing that. Also, the issues that have been raised in the Law Journal that has been referred to us today. So that we pick up those issues. If we want to put them into the code, we do that. So that when we send that document to the Chief Justice, it's a complete, then he comments once, rather than sending a lot of pieces to them. And then that would be approach. We also, because they'll be also looking at the input by IDASA. There are issues that might come out from that particular process too. So that we deal with something holistically and once, so that we don't, they will also be guiding us as to when will they be ready with their input, so that we can then plan our meetings accordingly and deal with them properly. I think that is the point that we wanted to raise.
Honourable members, you will recall that our initial extension was up until the 28th of January. You will all agree that as matters stand now, we need to approach both the Speaker of Parliament and the Chairperson of the NCOP for another extension for us, to enable us to finalize this process. We'll do that. We'll put a very strong motivation that we have made quite successive progress up to so far, but we don't foresee finalizing before Friday this week. Is that correct?
Maybe the other point, members, is that we are also aware that the regulations have been deferred. Now we were supposed to deal with both, you know, and that necessitates the extension, because we must wait for the meeting of the minister and other people, so that when they report back to us around the regulations, we are able to take that process forward. I was just emphasizing the point around the extension. Thanks.
Right. It seems we are now at the end, and unless there is someone who wants to draw our attention to any issue that we are overlooking. Researcher, are you happy? Thank you.
Yeah. I think I've also emulated the co-chairs, because I was speaking to my colleague while I was speaking. From our side, we should be done with the entire work in the next week maximum. So 7 days from now, in terms of the analysis, the throwing of some of the points which Cabinet may want to consider from the journal, whatever, we should be done in a week or so. Not exceeding a week. So we should send to the secretary something by next Tuesday or so. There is a meeting, an arranged meeting between the heads of courts and the minister on the 12th of February. On the 11th of February, sorry, just after the opening of Parliament. And it may help if there are any inputs that this House may require from them to take that opportunity. Otherwise, it becomes very difficult for the judges to convene that meeting. And they are also operating in a collegial approach. They always prefer to be together when they know that. They don't believe that one may sit in a computer and make comments. They like meetings. So all I'm saying is that there's a meeting already coming on the 12th, when they'll be here for Parliament, so that could be the opportunity. From the minister's side, we've also taken advantage of the meeting. That's where the minister will be discussing his own views with regard to the regulations. So that out of that meeting, there should then be a clear advice by the minister or report by the deputy speaker and the chairperson of the NCOP in terms of his attitude around the proposed amendments, etc. So I just want to share that with this house. Thank you.
Okay. Let me take this opportunity once more to extend our apology for any inconvenience for the changes of the time, and then to thank you specifically for your time now and for the input, comments and questions up to so far. And then we are going to adjourn this meeting, and then we will there is no meeting tomorrow, because initially we were under the impression that after these responses that we'll start deliberating on the code. It will serve no purpose to start deliberating tomorrow until such time that the Justice Department gives us the final response to everything. Siyabonga. You can't see it, Minister. Am I correct to say you can't see it?
Thank you. I'm talking a bit about the country.